Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 231, Gazpacho. Hey everybody, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the show. I'm Roger, your host, and this is the podcast all about home cooking, getting in the kitchen, learning new things, having fun. And today we're going to be getting in the kitchen to whip up a refreshing bowl of that Southern Spanish classic tomato-y refreshing gazpacho. Before we get there, of course, though, we have some housekeeping to take care of. The show notes for this particular episode will be over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/231. Again, that's kitchencounterpodcast.com/231. Throw that into your favorite web browser, and that will take you over to the webpage for this episode where I'll have this recipe for this gazpacho that we're making today and any other things that come up in the episode that I want to link to. You'll find them all there. Also in those show notes, links to all of my social media, as well as a link to the Nitty Grits Network, which is a network of shows about food, drink, and culture out of the Southern Food and Beverage Museum down in New Orleans, Louisiana. Southernfood.org is the web address for that. Head over there, look for Nitty Grits, and you'll see the other podcasts on the network. I know in my last episode, I said I would be on probably with my brother to talk about New Orleans, and we're still going to do that. We just haven't had a chance to get it scheduled yet. But I think it's going to be coming up in the near future, and I think I'm also going to have a boudin recipe that I've been working on to go with it, which will be an appropriate tie-in to the conversation I'm sure we'll have. So keep holding on. We're going to get back to the Louisiana, the New Orleans, the boudin, all that chat here real soon. Also, before I forget, feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com is my email address here at the show. So if you have a question or just want to say hi or are curious about a future topic for a show, you can go ahead and send me a note. feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. All right, let's get into this episode about gazpacho. So I wanted to talk about this today because as I'm recording this, we're just getting to the end of July 2023. Here in Oregon, the Willamette Valley, we've had some nice weather. We've had some hot weather. But I think for the most part, at least as far as North America is concerned, we've actually had pretty good weather. We haven't had the wicked, wicked, brutal heat wave that a lot of the folks around the rest of the country and parts of Canada have had. But I know in a lot of places, it has been wickedly hot. And you know, when it gets hot like that, I don't know about you, but I don't want to be in the kitchen cooking, heating up the house, you know, just spending a lot of time inside doing that kind of stuff. And when it gets that hot, it's even too hot to grill and to barbecue and to cook outside. And you just don't really want to do anything. So sometimes when it gets that hot, I find myself ordering out a lot or just eating cold foods like sandwiches that require no cooking at all. Because, you know, sometimes when it's hot, it's just too hot. And sometimes when it gets this hot, you just crave something that's easy, refreshing, and isn't going to heat you up and actually might even cool you down a little bit. So I like to look at soup as one of those things. Now, of course, I don't mean a hot steaming bowl of soup, but I mean the type of soup that in practically every other context people would think it was a mistake, and that's a category of soups that would be considered cold soups. And the title soup we're going to talk about today, gazpacho, is you know, one of the standard bearers of international cuisine as a very recognizable, a very well-loved cold soup. Now, I like gazpacho, and I picked it essentially here for this episode to just to narrow the focus down a little bit. But when we get into this discussion of cold soups, I think it's important to know that there are a lot of different types out there, and they're not all gazpacho. They're not all named, cold soups either. Practically any tasty, fresh ingredients, fruits, vegetables, herbs, things like that, can be made into a cold soup. I'll put some links in the show notes to some other ideas if you want to explore this idea of cold soup. Some folks might even call some of these drinks, but that's a discussion for another day. But as far as cold soups go, not only are they refreshing, but they're perfect in these hot summer months, especially where I live and where a lot of my listeners live, because the right types of ingredients are just coming into abundance right now. We're talking about the tomatoes and the peppers and the cucumbers. Those types of ingredients are what really make the gazpacho I'm going to talk about today sing. And right now, when it's really hot and really warm, they're not quite already here in the Willamette Valley in Oregon, but in some parts of the country they are, and it won't be too terribly long until they're really ready at their peak here either. And those are the types of ingredients that we really want to look for when we're making a cold soup. I'm talking not about a soup that has been cooked and cooled, but a soup that literally has not been cooked and all the ingredients have just been prepared and put together, and then they're eaten after they've been chilled. So it really is a great super hot summertime weather dish because it will not heat up your house at all. And again, most of the ingredients that it calls for should be coming into season, and it's really the best time of year to make something like this. Now, I almost considered doing a live recording episode for a portion of this to walk through the making of this gazpacho, but quite frankly, I realized all it would essentially be would be me chopping up some vegetables and blending them and then tossing them in the fridge to chill. And that, you know, that's probably not that interesting. So aside from just linking to the recipe, I think it's just easy enough to walk through and to talk through rather without live cooking it or live prepping it, if you will, or preparing it in the kitchen. So I decided not to do that this time, not to mention that part of the time would just be the blender running, and that's never that fun to listen to. But by me saying this, I also want to illustrate that it is an extremely simple dish to put together. Now, what is a gazpacho? And that's usually spelled G-A-Z-P-A-C-H-O. Gazpacho, and there's different ways to pronounce it as well, but that's the way I'm going with. This is a dish that's a Spanish in origin from Andalusia in the south of Spain, and it probably is a very ancient dish, and it probably has Arabic origins. It's possible that variations of this dish made it to the Iberian Peninsula during Roman times. Of course, all of those old varieties of this dish would not have featured tomatoes or peppers because those particular products are from the New World, North and Central and South America. So those were not available in the Iberian Peninsula, in Spain, in Europe, in any of the Old World for that matter, until they started going back after colonial explorers found those items and took them back to the Old World, which, not to go off on a deep tangent, and I've talked about this before, but to me, that is one of the most fascinating periods in human history, especially in human culinary history, was the connecting of the New World and the Old World, and the ingredients, particularly that were available in the New World, and I'm just using the term New World again to sort of denote what we in the Western Hemisphere would now call North, Central, and South America, and then the Old World, of course, being Europe, Africa, Asia, Middle East. But the idea that there were all of these ingredients that I think in world cuisine we really take for granted right now that really didn't exist in the Old World, even ingredients and recipes that are you think have probably are eons old and have been around since ancient times. I mean, think about, tomato sauce and pasta in Italy. Think about the potato in Ireland. Think about hot peppers in Indian and Asian cuisine, for example. None of that was possible before those ingredients were brought back from the New World and introduced into Old World cuisine. So it's very fascinating. So when I talk about something like a gazpacho, which in this recipe is a very tomato and pepper centric dish, that's something that really wasn't a thing until probably, the 1700s, until it really started taking off on the Iberian Peninsula. So even though the roots of a gazpacho may be ancient times, it would have looked very, very different. There would have been no tomatoes, no peppers. So it would have been a very different dish, not something like the international gazpacho that we would think of today. Like any dish, even really famous dishes, there are many, many, many different ways to make them. And there are even many different ways to make what people would call an authentic version of that dish. Some folks like their gazpacho smooth and silky, almost like a drink. Some like their gazpacho more chunky, more like what here in North America we might think of as more of a salsa type of a consistency. Some recipes call for the inclusion of bread in the gazpacho. You soak and you puree that into your gazpacho. Some recipes don't. And there are other variations as well. But what this boils down to is not only personal preference, but regional preference. Even within Spain, there are many different types of gazpachos. So when I'm talking about the one I will today, just keep in mind this is not necessarily an authentic or an inauthentic gazpacho. It just is one type of many in the world of gazpacho. Personally, I'm a smooth gazpacho type of a guy. I don't like mine chunky. I like mine pureed to a silky consistency. So that's the version I'm going to share today. Again, I'll put some links in the show notes and you can find different types that maybe suit your taste and your preference a little bit closer. But for me, this one really works, again, with really fresh ingredients. You know, I'm not a raw tomato guy. I can count on a few fingers the dishes that I enjoy a raw tomato in. But this works because the freshness of the tomatoes, the other vegetables that are included, and there are some other ingredients, a few spices, vinegar, and things like that, that round everything out. It's refreshing, but also at the same time, it's a meal and it can be quite hearty. So let me walk through the recipe for this gazpacho. And again, there's no cooking, but there are a couple of pieces of equipment I would recommend, especially if you want to make the smooth type that I'm going to be talking about. I've got a high-speed blender. I like to use that when I puree anything. It's a Vitamix. You don't need a Vitamix to make this dish. You can use any blender, really. An immersion blender or a handheld blender works well. Even a food processor can work. With something like a Vitamix or a Blendtec or those other really high-speed blenders, you just might find that you don't need to end up doing any straining or anything like that. If you make this version in a food processor and you want it to be nice and smooth, you may need to pass it through like some cheesecloth or a food mill or something like that, just to make sure you remove any bits that aren't exactly pureed or liquefied, if you will. So for this version, a blender of some sort or a food processor, if that's all you've got, are a must. Other than that, a cutting board and a sharp knife really is all you're going to need. As far as ingredients, again, I'll put this in the show notes, but this is roughly how we're going to roll. First thing you're going to want, of course, the base of our gazpacho will be tomatoes, about 2 pounds. I like to use juicier tomatoes, so I would steer clear of like beefsteak or slicer tomatoes and go more with your typical tomatoes on the vine, to use supermarket parlance. But any tomato that's a little bit juicier is going to work out better. And you're going to want to core those, take the stem and core them. And then I like to remove most of the seeds if I can. Again, because I'm putting them through a blender, it's going to take care of the skin and everything like that. If you don't have that luxury and you don't want to have to strain it, you could certainly take the skins off your tomatoes ahead of time as well. I like to use cucumber, just a regular garden variety cucumber, maybe about a cup or so chopped and seeded and peeled. I like to use red bell pepper, so I'll take one red bell pepper and slice that up. You know, of course, take the core and the seeds out. A sweet onion, a small Vidalia or Walla Walla or Maui or a Mayan sweet onion, a clove of garlic or two. Those are your produce items that you're going to use to make this gazpacho. The next set of ingredients, you're going to want some extra virgin olive oil. I'd like about a quarter cup, which is about 3 tablespoons, and a little bit extra for garnishing at the end. 2 tablespoons of white wine vinegar. I would say kosher or sea salt to taste, but you're probably looking at least a teaspoon. Black pepper to taste. If you like cumin, if you like red pepper flakes, if you like paprika, I think you can add a little bit of all of that to give a little more character to your gazpacho. Maybe a quarter teaspoon of each or so. And then I like bread in my gazpacho. So white bread. I had some leftover French bread in a round. I cut probably an inch thick slice right from near the center. I took the crust off and then I soaked the bread in some water to soften it up. Some folks, again, will argue whether bread should or shouldn't be included. I'll tell you why I like to include it. It gives the gazpacho some body and some creaminess without having to add any dairy or any cream of or butter for that matter. But it gives it some body and it gives it some creaminess that is really appealing to me. So I definitely would recommend including the bread. So how do you make this? You literally take everything I mentioned except the olive oil, you throw it in your blender, and you puree that stuff for, depending on what kind of blender you have, you may need to work in batches. But in the Vitamix, I can get it all in, and I puree it for probably a minute until everything is good and well liquefied. Now, at this point, if you're using a food processor or you're using a blender that doesn't quite liquefy that well and you want a smooth gazpacho, you might want to consider, as I mentioned before, straining. But in the Vitamix, my next step here is I am going to turn it back on to high speed, and then I am going to very slowly drizzle in that olive oil, maybe a half a teaspoon at a time. And while it's blending, it will start to create an emulsion, and it will give that gazpacho even more body. And what's lovely about that is the garlic in that gazpacho is going to help with that emulsion too, because it's a really great emulsifier. So this olive oil, as you're drizzling it in slowly and the blender is doing its magic, is going to emulsify, and it's going to create this great silky mouthfeel and texture. And if you do it slowly, and I recommend doing it at the end like this instead of putting it at the beginning, but if you do it slowly, your emulsion should hold pretty well while you put the gazpacho in the refrigerator to cool down. That's it. Once you do that, it's done. You can throw it in the fridge. I recommend for at least a few hours. If you don't have the luxury of time, you can serve your gazpacho over ice in a bowl or in a glass, and garnish it as you see fit. You can use fresh herbs. If you like a little bit of texture, you can reserve some chopped tomato and chopped pepper and garnish with that. I personally like to garnish with croutons. My favorite way to do that is I had some more of that leftover French bread. I just cut those into small cubes and I heat up some butter in a skillet until it's good and hot. And then I throw the cubes of white French bread, again, no crust, in there. And I just cook them and stir them until they get nice and brown on all sides. They take on a nice buttery taste. They get kind of crunchy. Hit them with a dash of salt. And then I like to garnish my gazpacho with those. And then just a drizzle of extra virgin olive oil around the top. And you're set. It's delicious. If you've never had it, you absolutely should try it. If you love tomatoes, especially in-season homegrown tomatoes. And if you've got them, you should try this. I know we get tired of BLTs. We get tired of making salsa. We get tired of making tomato sauce. we get tired of chopping tomatoes and putting them on salad. Like, what else can you do with your bumper crop of tomatoes? Make gazpacho. And because it does work best chilled, you can make it in the morning or the night before, and it's ready to go for lunch or dinner the next day. And actually, it'll probably taste even better the next day. Now, as you can see from this description, it's an incredibly easy thing to make. Again, the show notes over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/231. I'll put the steps for this. And again, links to some other varieties. If you don't have a high-speed blender, you don't feel like blending it, and you want to make a more rustic version that's a little more chunky and has a little more texture and body, hey, that's cool too. I'll put some links to those sorts of recipes in the show notes as well. And once you try this and decide if you think you like it or not, if you've never had it, maybe you already know you like it and you know how you like to make it, you can start experimenting with other seasonal vegetables or even fruits. You know, like watermelon gazpacho is fantastic. But there's lots of things you can add into a gazpacho to give it some interest and character. And it's really, like I said at the beginning, fresh produce, the sky is the limit when it comes to making cold soups like this. All right, everybody. I know this was kind of a shorter episode, but I wanted to get this out because I know we're in the height of the heat wave here in the States and at least around where I'm from. And I know a lot of folks more south of me are really having it tough. So if you don't want to cook and you want to cool down, give a gazpacho a try. As I mentioned, I'm going to try to get my brother into a recording session so we can wrap up our sort of post-review of our trip to Louisiana from about a month ago. And we want to talk about Boudin and some other good stuff that we saw and ate while we were down there. So I think probably maybe even the next episode, we'll tackle that. Speaking of Louisiana and New Orleans, head over to southernfood.org to check out the Southern Food and Beverage Museum down in New Orleans, Louisiana, and the Nitty Grits Network, of which this show is a proud member. There's some other great shows about food, drink, and culture down out of the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, and you can find them by heading over to that web address, again, southernfood.org. Well, that's going to do it for another episode of the Kitchen Counter Podcast. I hope everyone is enjoying their summer as much as they can, staying cool, figuring out how to use some great local seasonal produce and incorporating that into your cooking. And heck, I hope you're not cooking all the time either. I hope you're getting over to friends and family and enjoying cookouts with them, or maybe getting down to the local food truck pod and having some great food truck food, or taking, you know, stopping by and getting some supplies from your local grocery and going out for a picnic at the park or by the river or whatever. In general, I just hope you're enjoying yourselves and you're having a great time this summer with your friends and your family. All right, everybody, until next time, I am Roger with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Happy cooking.